Well, it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in, as you do, I'm sure, every single week on Tuesday afternoon at Joy 620, or you're listening to the podcast that you can find over at investinghope.com or iTunes, Google Play app, wherever podcasts are found. Today, we are going to talk to a guest, a good friend of mine, about what has happened. And I know that the last few weeks, we've really focused on COVID and the coronavirus and what that has done to not just our state, but to our country. A few weeks ago, and I don't want to toot my own horn, but a few weeks ago, we talked about nursing homes. And I said that was going to be the story when all of this was said and done. And guess what? All the other outlets are now catching up, and a lot of focus is being sent to the lack of care that we provided for those that were living in nursing homes, as we see states like New York and others that mandated nursing home take-in patients that were infected with COVID, even if they were still contagious, and thousands have died because of that. And so we'll look at that as well. But what I want to do today is bring in a good friend, State Representative Jason Zachary, who is a state rep from here in the Knoxville area. And just everything that's going on currently and that has gone on in the state of Tennessee, the legislature had to cut their time short this year. We've seen budget numbers, we've seen unemployment numbers, just something that has really rocked not just this state but the country. But I wanted to bring Jason on to talk about why it matters to have good leadership, and what we have seen consistently from our governor is strong leadership and really past governors, as we see a rainy day fund that is being tapped into right now. So, Jason, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, Andrew, thanks for having me, man. It's good to be on with you.
So, Jason, as we look at that, every year, I'm sure you kind of plan your year out as you're in the legislature, like, look, from January to maybe May at the latest June, I'm going to be making my way back and forth to Nashville. And then this year, the pandemic hit. And your wife was probably like, "Well, this means you're going to be home more," and so tell us about what that was like as you were trying to lead your constituents and bring in information to your constituents as all of that was hitting right there, you know, late February and in the month of March, and what that looked like for the state of Tennessee.
Sure. Yeah. In early March, we began to realize and began to have meetings, caucus meetings with the Republican caucus, and then even some meetings, just the House in general, about, hey, this is dramatically shifting, and the conversations that we're hearing federally that are coming down to the state, there is a really good chance we don't finish session like we expected. And then it was about the beginning of March, and then it just went into complete fast forward, and we found ourselves having to quickly strip out everything that had been included in a budget. We're not talking about a small budget. The $40 billion budget is what it was projected to be this year. So we strip everything out. And I believe it was the second week of March. It was the busiest it had ever, I'm in my third term, and it was the busiest I'd ever seen our building. We had so many groups on campus and our building, and advocates and lobbyists. And it was a really busy time. We go from that week to, I believe it was the third week in March, and where we close the building, no one's allowed in. Where every other seat, they're wiping things down. It was like a ghost town. Nashville completely emptied out. We had a hard time finding restaurants to eat at. The hotel occupancy went to like 6 to 7% occupancy after being at like 85%. And Nashville was a ghost town. And so we were trying to quickly finish up. We were spending like 16 hours on the House floor, working through the budget, working through legislation, and then we went into recess just to give us time to be able to come back versus adjourning sine die. We went into recess, and we're going to go back the last week of May, start the committees back up. It's going to look very different than it did even when we left. And then starting June 1st, we're going to go back into session, because June 15th, the final budget number comes out for the year. And that's something we can talk a little bit about later, but the numbers have already started to roll in. The number for April came out this morning, which was strikingly lower than we thought it was going to be in terms of the revenue coming in. So we're going to go back June 1st. The financial numbers for the state come out June 15th, and so that our following that next week after June 15th will be our last week. We'll adjourn sine die and have a shortened session, but we'll be done probably by late June.
Yeah, it's just been man, it has been a whirlwind. And even hearing you say, you know, the 1st of March, like that seems so long ago.
So, I know.
As we think through this, I read an article the other day, and they coined a phrase, the year without a summer. And I would argue, I would say, no, it's not that. It's the year with the longest summer. I mean, it feels like, you know, with kids out of school, with all of this, we've kind of extended the summertime in terms of our work and in terms of schools and a lot of people working from home. And you know as well as I do, the unemployment numbers just continue to roll in and are just staggering. The amount of folks that have had to either be furloughed or laid off or have quit, or their small businesses have closed completely. I know of businesses that have filed bankruptcy. I mean, it came out of nowhere. We went from an economy that was just rolling. I mean, from a national level, just absolutely rolling, every day breaking records, unemployment at record lows. And in the state of Tennessee, I mean, we've seen year after year after year of surplus numbers, revenues very high, low taxes, still just hitting everything on all cylinders. And then to, in essence, wipe all of that away in a couple months.
Completely.
It's just shocking.
The economic progress we've made in Tennessee, and unlike other states that just spend the out of control spending, and like New York went into this pandemic with a $6.1 billion deficit, and then they're looking for the taxpayers across the country to bail them out for their mismanagement. Here in Tennessee, starting under Governor Haslam and Republican leadership under Lieutenant Governor Ron Ramsey and Speaker Harwell, We set ourselves on this trajectory where we slashed taxes, we slashed government, we slashed regulation, and it just catapulted us into growth where we literally, Tennessee has been in the top three economically for every major category since I've been there in 2015. And we took our rainy day fund that had been completely depleted because our friends on the other side of the aisle had used one-time dollars out of the emergency fund, out of the rainy day fund, to balance our budget. We had to replenish that. It was basically at nothing, and we put it up to, it's now over $1.1 billion. And now we find ourselves back, golly, man, it's 8 weeks ago, 8.5, 9 weeks ago, we were the most physically stable state in the country, lowest debt, lowest tax per capita, on and on and on, 8 weeks ago. And thankfully, under Republican leadership, we were in that position because now, we the government, have totally nuked our economy for a virus. Now we find ourselves on the opposite spectrum where we have almost 500,000 Tennesseans out of work. We've wiped out 10 years of economic job growth in 8.5 weeks. We've wiped it out completely. The numbers came out this morning, and we have a $693 million budget shortfall just for the month of April. That's just April. And so that wipes out all our surplus for the year that we were going to have. And now we find ourselves in a position where we know May's numbers are going to be not as rough, but probably pretty close.
Sure.
So then we have to look at accessing the rainy day fund. And so it's stunning to think about that we did this to ourselves. And now, as you pointed out, we find out that well over half the deaths have come out of nursing homes. Pennsylvania, I believe, it's 67%. Yep. Minnesota, it's 80% of their deaths are in nursing homes. With the antibody testing is now moving forward quickly, and we're finding out hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people have already been exposed to it. And so you just take a step back, and I was talking to Congressman Burchett about that this morning. You just take a step back and think, dear Lord, what have we done?
And that's the thing. I mean, Ohio, with the latest antibody testing, Ohio is saying, you know, folks had it in their state back to January. And look, we're a traveling country. Okay, so if Ohioans had it in January, Tennesseans did, if not before, and New York, and of course all of these places. And look, I get it. I know that we were, if you want to give the benefit of the doubt, we were doing the best we can with the information that we had, the data that we had. And look, in the early days, no one really knew. We saw models coming out. We didn't know if the models were true or if they were accurate, what they looked like. And so, but when you see a model that says, hey, if we don't do something, there could be 2 million deaths just in America, well, that's going to cause us for some concern.
Andrew, the initial projections that I'm not going to name an entity because I can't remember which one it was, but the initial projections we got were that 150,000 Tennesseans would be hospitalized. When you get that kind of staggering number from medical experts that are renowned as the best in the country, everybody has to take a step back and pause.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what we did. But we're however many, I guess, 3, 4, 5 weeks into it, then all of a sudden the models and projections begin to change dramatically. And to our governor's credit, I know he's been criticized by going too far, and I haven't agreed with every single thing he's done. I don't agree with my wife about everything, so we're not going to agree on absolutely everything. But he is to be credited for his measured approach and how he resisted the calls to just lock us down, keep us locked down. Most people, because it's so challenging right now, most people fail to recognize that we were one of the first 5 states in the nation to reopen.
Right.
And so we were one of the last to close, to do a stay-at-home order, and we were one of the first to reopen. So again, it's important to remember that with our governor, and he's relying on experts to give him information to make decisions. And the one thing that I talked about with him that was so frustrating for him is leaders, we make decisions based on information. And he was trying to make decisions on information and statistics and figures that were given to him that literally were changing every week to 2 weeks. So you think about, as a leader trying to make decisions for 6.8 million people, and you have a target that is constantly moving, man, that is literally an impossible situation for a leader to make decisions. No leader can make the correct decision every single time with that. But to his credit, our governor is as good a leader as I've ever been around, and he has been steady and measured. And it could have been much worse. And fortunately, we've got a governor that's as conservative as we are, and he made the best decisions he could make based on the information that was provided.
Well, and not just that, but also you have a tornado that wrecks Nashville. You have a tornado that wrecks Chattanooga. You have so many other things that you're trying to juggle at the same time. And so as we think through these things, you know, and that's the interesting part. And you can kind of see the way the media operates, you can kind of see, if you're watching and paying attention, where most of them live, because who's getting the credit, who's getting the focus? It's Cuomo. And if we're honest with ourselves, not great in terms of the way it's been handled in the state of New York. And the reason why, there's a plenty of reasons why the governor here in Tennessee is not getting the focus that he deserves. There's plenty of reasons why, Harvard just came out and said, who's leading the way in testing?
That's right.
Tennessee. You know, and so we're doing great things in the state of Tennessee while also doing our best to say, look, we can't keep everybody at home. We need to protect the vulnerable. We need to protect those that are most at risk to this virus, while also understanding we have some people's livelihoods have been wiped away. There are definitely 100% some businesses that were open and doing just fine right there at the end of February that will not open back up when all this is said and done. And that is a heavy, heavy truth that we have to recognize and understand that when we have this conversation, it is one of a virus and a pandemic, while also recognizing we have an economic situation that if we don't do something about, we may bring ourselves back to a depression. And so that's the, you know, it's interesting to me when you have those conversations, some people go, well, I thought you were pro-life. Well, clearly you're not, because all you care about is the economy. No, I love my mother-in-law. I love my mom, who's a cancer survivor, who's vulnerable to this virus. I love my grandparents, who are vulnerable to this virus. But I also understand that we can, as policymakers, we need policy people that are looking at our economy while also looking at those that are at risk and figuring out the best way to walk through that. And it's not easy. I recognize that it's not easy, but it is something that, to be frank, politicians signed up for when they put their name in the hat. And so when we come back, Jason, let's talk about that, the responsibility of those that throw their name in the hat. Hey, for these moments, for these tough, what some would say impossible moments of leadership, and let's talk about some ways that Tennessee, I think, frankly, and maybe I'm a little biased, has really shined bright during this time because of the leadership that we have in place. We'll talk about that more when we come back.
I want to be different. I want to be changed.
till all of me is gone, and all that remains is a fire so bright the whole world can see that there's something different. So come and be different in me.
So as we continue the conversation today, joined by Jason Zachary, Representative Jason Zachary, who represents the Farragut area. What house district is that, Jason?
District 14.
District 14 here in the Knoxville area. And Jason and I have become friends over the years because we have a lot of similar interests, if you can't tell from this conversation. But Jason, talk a little bit about the other day you posted on your personal Facebook page what I think was very eloquently written. Hey, look, we've been in tough times before as a nation, and we've come out of those tough times. And you look at the leaders that this nation has produced in terms of George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, the list goes on and on and on. And so we've been through these moments where what many would call impossible moments. And we find ourselves in one, I think, right now, where you have a segment of folks saying, we have to be, I mean, you've had governor from Virginia saying, we may need to be locked down until we have a vaccine. You have the NBA commissioner saying, we may not be able to have people watching basketball games in the arena until a vaccine is here. You have the SEC trying to figure out what football season looks like. You have universities trying to figure out, can we come back to school in the fall? And all of these things, what we've seen is we've seen some leaders step out and really shine during these times. And we've seen other leaders that have stepped out and just keep stepping on that rake and keep getting hit in the face. And so what does it mean, I guess, being a state rep, being kind of on the front line when it comes to policy, what have you seen from the leaders in this state, even think locally here with our county mayor and others, that have stepped up in this very difficult time to provide some level-headed conversations and policy making?
Yeah, and Andrew, I think it's important to remember and recognize would be a better word. It's important to recognize the leadership that we have right here. Mayor Jacobs has been fantastic through this. He has been bold in his leadership. He has been steadfast. I bet I have talked to him three or four times a day for the last 6 or 7 weeks as we kind of walk through this. I think one of the most important aspects of this is the relationship we all have on the political side, the political leaders in Knox County, the relationship we have, which allows for really good communication. Congressman Burchett, myself, and Mayor Jacobs pulled together 7 or 8 retailers like 6 or 7 weeks ago, trying to get best practices, guidance from them that we could then pass along on our various levels to businesses. That way, that could prepare, that we're preparing to open and looking at ways to safely reopen. Just the level of communication we have. Mayor Jacobs has been steady. Congressman Burchett is as accessible as any congressman in the country. And so he's still meeting with people, still on the front line, so he's getting direct feedback. And our offices just work so well together. And it goes for the rest of the delegation on the state level. But just from my personal experience, just working with those two guys, we not have better leaders, one in our county and then with Congressman Burchett representing us in Washington, because those guys are steadfast, all in agreement that this is serious. And you said it earlier, this is serious. This is a virus that really, it's a virus that targets the elderly and goes after the elderly in a way that doesn't impact anybody. Those are our most vulnerable. We've talked about nursing homes. We talk about the need to protect our elderly, and my goodness, we have to, and they've got to be wise in what they do. But the bottom line is, we are a nation of individual liberty. We're built on individual liberty, property, property rights. That's our Constitution, the foundation of who we are. And you referenced my Facebook post, and that was kind of the premise of that post, is that what has happened to us? We have allowed a virus to cripple us and bring us to our knees. George Washington said that we have an unconquerable resolution. That was the difference in the colonialists and the greatest army in the world and the British. It was our unconquerable resolution. And we have been through so much as a nation. We defeated the Germany and Japan. We brought peace to the world. We've been the world's peacekeepers. We've survived 9/11, a cowardly terrorist attack on our land. All these things that have happened to us, much worse than a virus, but yet we have allowed this virus to bring us to our knees. And ultimately, it comes down to individual freedom and individual choice that I know there's risk. There's a risk me getting in a car and driving somewhere, and there's a risk in whatever it may be. And this virus, we've got to put it in its place and recognize the seriousness of it. But for the majority of us, the vast majority of us who are healthy, no underlying conditions, even if we get it, there's a 99.24% chance we're going to recover and be fine. And we have to move on. We have to move forward, because the longer we continue down this path, the worse it's going to cripple our nation, the longer it's going to take to recover. And that debt and deficit are going to grow to the point where it's going to be beyond unmanageable. We got supply chains that are being broken. The list goes on and on and on. So it comes to a point, especially as believers, Andrew, and I know that's kind of the audience we're talking to here, we don't have a spirit of timidity, but a power, love, and self-discipline. Our foundation and our security is built on the rock of Christ. And so ultimately, we have to be wise, but we don't walk in fear. And I think so many of us, believer or non-believer, have just walked in fear and in this uncertainty. And man, we got to put this in its place and recognize the risk, but we have to move on. For the sake of our country, we have to move on and move forward.
Well, I think that's been my frustration, is the in moments like this, we need level-headed, rational conversation. That's what we need. That is why you put your name in the hat to run for office. That's why Governor Lee did. That's why Burchett did. That's why if you want to believe the best and assume the best of everyone that's ever ran for office, the hope is it's the, look, I didn't run just to be a rep during the good times, but it's when crisis hits, that's when our leadership is going to shine or show that we're weak and really don't know what we're doing. And for me, when politicians come out and say, look, we need to have a level-headed conversation about the risk factor of this, while also understanding we can't sustain this many unemployed in this country, that is a conversation that needs to happen. That's not saying that we disregard those that are affected by this virus. That's not saying that we disregard that there are going to be some young people that get it. That's not saying that at all. It's just saying that, look, we've been tasked as people that are representing constituents across this country, we've been tasked to step into these moments and represent everyone. And the frustration that I've had is you've had some, very few, that have gone the extreme of, look, this is nothing, don't worry about it, just get back. That's not what we're saying here. But you also had some that are saying, you're going to have to stay locked up till we get a vaccine. Well, that's impossible. That's correct. That's not sustainable in the freest country on the planet. It's just not. And so so there's so many conversations that have to go on. And so I'm appreciative of folks like you and Mayor Jacobs and Congressman Burchett and so many that have stepped out and had the hard conversations. I mean, when Mayor Jacobs stood at a press conference and talked about laying off employees of the county and he got emotional, there's a reason why he got emotional. First off, he was angry. Second, because he cares deeply about his people, but also he cares deeply about the constituency, and he understands that there are some business owners that are not going to come back from this. Understands the mental health issue of this, and that many may die of suicide because of what has happened. And so there's so many conversations that are going to have to happen, complex, very much involved conversations. But if we're not looking at it from a logical, rational standpoint, then all you're going to become is just a talking head. And we don't need talking heads during this moment. We need rational conversations about how to move the ball down the field. And moving the ball down the field isn't just sitting on it and waiting until there's a vaccine. That is not, it can't be the answer that we wind up with. And I'm thankful that in the state of Tennessee, that is not the answer. And it seems like from the Oval Office that is not the answer. Jason, can you hold on for one more segment with us?
Sure, yes, sir.
Okay, Jason will be back with us here in just a second, and we'll talk more about the state and the state of our country with the COVID-19 pandemic.
Oh, I am difference maker. Oh, I am the only one that speaks to you. I am the friendliest of friends of God.
Joined by State Representative Jason Zachary, and the reason I wanted to have Jason on today is to give kind of behind the curtain look at what our state officials are looking at in terms of the decisions that are being made. And really, I know that there's folks that listen to this show that are from other states and out of state and trying to, this may not pertain specifically to where what they're going through in their state, but I did want to give them a glimpse into the mindset of a state rep and what that looks like. And also one thing that we have seen, and I've been really pleased that we've seen it across the board, is federalism at work, is the fact that we don't have the Oval Office. We don't have Washington, D.C. telling the whole country what to do. Now, they've released guidelines and to help with phasing and all of those things which we needed. But it's been really nice to see, for once, in an issue that matters, the state of Tennessee doing something that maybe New York's not doing. And what we've seen in this virus is, of course, the epicenter was going to be New York City. They live on top of each other. They have public transit, all of those things. And so we shouldn't be operating the same way they are operating. And it's been kind of refreshing, Jason, to see the state of Tennessee being able to operate as the state in the direction we want to go.
Yeah, it has, Andrew. And it's a credit to our governor and the legislature. I mean, we have made specific decisions regarding the situation on the ground in Tennessee and responding to how this COVID virus has affected Tennessee, because you look at Shelby and Davidson, by far the hardest hit counties, and it's to be expected. Those are the two areas that are the largest, have the international airports, and then you come to East Tennessee, Hamilton County and Chattanooga, here in Knox and Knoxville. We've been blessed because I didn't have the opportunity to look at the active case count this morning, but I know yesterday it was 63. You're talking about 63 active cases, three hospitalizations in a county of 470,000 people. So again, to our point that we were making earlier, while it's something we have to take it seriously, it has such an impact on the elderly, and the majority of those deaths are with the elderly, especially those with underlying conditions. Even with that, 63 active cases, three hospitalizations in a county of 470,000 people. So we have to make sure that we continue to social distance where we can, hygiene, protect ourselves. If you feel comfortable wearing a mask, great. If you don't wear one. And don't judge somebody if they do or if they don't. Let's be good neighbors. But there's so many steps that we can take just individually, because we as the Tennessee state government have made it really clear, and the governor even changed his language from guidance to suggestions. Everything that is on the table right now, whether it's the Knox County Health Department or whether it's the state of Tennessee, these are all suggestions, guidance and suggestions. These are no longer mandates. And so the governor's been asked, well, what happens if a business doesn't do this or a church doesn't do this? And he said, it's up to the market to decide. If, you know, X business decides we're not going to, X restaurant says we're going to let everybody sit down, we're going to open our bar up, and we're going to have a great time, well, there's a really good chance the market will respond and not enter that restaurant. And so we've been really, really careful of individual liberties, about not overstepping our bounds. Everything that the governor has done is we as the legislature have allowed him to do through Chapter 58 in the code, where it was before I got there, but it gave him certain powers under emergency situations, and he has used those with as much restraint as possible. And again, we were one of the last states to issue a stay-at-home, and we were one of the first five states to lift that and reopen the economy. And so we as the legislature and the executive branch have done all we can to make sure we have done this as conservatively as possible. We never, ever shut down churches. Now, churches decided not to meet, but the governor's made it abundantly clear. The churches were exempt. The churches were deemed essential, and churches could meet if they wanted to. And I know some of the smaller churches around the state continued to meet, but most of the larger churches did the responsible thing and stopped meeting on Sunday mornings and went to online. But those are the things we've done as a state to make sure we deal with this, we address it as aggressively as possible with testing and all that we've done, while also working as hard as possible to try to maintain that individual liberty aspect of who we are as a people.
Well, I think that's why elections matter, right? I mean, that's why that vote matters. And so when we voted for these folks, you know, whether it been 2 years ago, 4 years ago, or whatever that looks like, in our mind, we didn't go, well, in 2020, you know, everything's going to hit the fan and a pandemic is coming down the pike. But we do know that we pulled those. I mean, I even think back to 9/11, and I think of the mess that occurred in that 2000 election and the hanging chads and all of that, all of those things. And I remember I was 17 years old, and I remember thanking the Lord in the heavens above that President Bush was in office at that time. You know, and so I didn't know that was going to happen, but we know that these times could come. We know that in a post-Genesis 3 world that everything is broken. You know, and that's an interesting thing. People are like, well, we got to get back to some sense of normal. Look, in a post-Genesis 3 world, nothing's normal. Okay, and so we are dealing with the fracturing of all of that. And what that means is pandemics may come. But the amazing thing about this country and what we have dealt with over the years is we are prepared for those things. And leadership matters in those moments. And like you were saying, here's the latest numbers. As of Tuesday, the Knox County Health Department said there have been 301 positive cases of COVID-19. 66 cases currently active, 230 have recovered, and 5 people have tragically died during that time. Now what we're seeing across the country, for the most part, except for the epicenter like New York City or maybe right there in Chicago, some other larger cities, the numbers are declining. What's been frustrating for me is watching articles written as states open back up. So Texas, for instance, took away the stay-at-home order like last week. Well, there immediately an article was written saying thousands test positive after the safe at home order is lifted. And I'm going, well, we don't know that. That's not an honest headline because the order was lifted yesterday and these positive tests just happened to come out today. That doesn't mean we tested thousands yesterday and the test came back today. That's not how it works. And so the frustration has mounted because of the dishonest headlines that have come out during this. And we know that there's biased media and all of these things. But it's been so hard to navigate that. And me and you, we've been texting throughout this whole thing. You know, I'll send you articles or this person is saying this or, you know, but it seems like every day there's a different thing coming out. And I can't imagine trying to make decisions in those moments. I mean, even as as kind of leading Hope Resource Center, we're having to make decisions with data that we have in front of us. And we know that abortion clinics aren't closing, so we don't want to close because we don't want the only option for a woman facing unplanned pregnancy to be the abortion clinic. Right. And so we've had to implement protocols and strategies in place to keep people safe while also seeing our patients. And so it's a hard task to take up, but it's worth the effort. That's what I signed up for. Again, when said yes to that job, I didn't say, well, only when things are going well. Now, if a pandemic hits, I'm going to throw my white flag up and just go, I don't know what to do. Like, that's not what I signed up for. And so what we've seen across the, at least in this state, and certainly here in East Tennessee, I've been really pleased with what we've seen. One thing I did want to touch on before you get off of here, the other day, I believe it was on Monday night, The Price is Right did a celebrity version of The Price is Right, and they had RuPaul on there. And if you don't know who RuPaul is, I'm not even going to tell you to Google him, but just
you're better for it.
Yeah. So, but they had RuPaul on there, and they were going to match all the charitable giving. And so during a pandemic, when people are losing their jobs, you have people like Guy Ferrari on the Food Network raising $25 million to help out restaurant workers, which is amazing, and he should be applauded for that. You have people doing so many wonderful things. And The Price is Right and RuPaul donated $100,000 to Planned Parenthood. That was their celebrity, their charity of choice. And I just don't even know what to say to it, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, there's no words. You're with everything that we're going through, you're going to give $100,000 to kill babies. And that, Andrew, just to be straight up political with you, that is the most frustrating, enraging aspect of doing what we do. And my feelings as a conservative Christian in this world, in the hypocrisy that I have had to deal with over the last 9 weeks, with the majority of the Democrats that we have to work where, where the terrible Republicans are trying to open the economy because we don't care about the elderly, yet they continue to push and support pro-choice killing of babies, and yet the hypocrisy of that with then we're not supporting and loving the elderly well when we're looking to open the economy to protect everyone, to preserve what we have as a country and to preserve the economic well-being of children. And man, it's one of those things, I'm just trying to be really measured and careful in how I respond to that, because it really is, the hypocrisy should outrage anybody who cares about the life and protection of the unborn.
It's been interesting to see folks like Joe Biden and Governor Cuomo from New York say that if we save one life, it's worth the effort. It's really interesting to hear those folks use that language when they are in support of millions of babies being aborted every single year. Jason, thank you so much for joining us today. Love you, man. Good luck. We'll be praying for you in the months ahead. Keep our state going in the right direction, brother. Thanks for what you do.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me on.
So I'm thankful that Jason Zachary joined me earlier. I guess I should call him Representative Zachary, but we're friends, and so it would be weird if I just went every time I saw him, I was like, hey, what's up, State Representative Jason Zachary? But the reason I wanted him on is because, first off, he loves Jesus, and so that's really what brought us together, was our obviously our conservatism, but our love of the Lord and how the gospel, how we view everything through the gospel lens. And so he is a huge partner of Hope Resource Center and a great supporter of the work that we do. He fights for life in Nashville in the legislature. He has great relationship with the governor, with Governor Lee and Congressman Burchett, and they're just doing great work. And so I wanted to have him on to help us get a kind of behind the scenes, behind the curtain view of how the state is making decisions. And this is going to be different. So if you are listening to this and you don't live in the state of Tennessee, first off, I would say, why? Why do you not live here? Because it is the greatest state in the union. And that is my unbiased opinion. Second, I would say, this is why it matters. This is why it matters who you vote for. Now, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. This is a free country. If you want to vote for the Democrat, the Republican, the Independent, the Libertarian, the Green Party, that's on you. But in times like this, like it's easy to lead when the economy's booming, when things are going well, when everybody's got a job, everybody's got what they say the American dream was, a house and two cars in the driveway. It's easy to lead when everything is hitting on all cylinders. It's hard to lead when a pandemic strikes. It's hard to lead when the economy comes to a screeching halt. It's hard to lead when a tornado rips through your state capital. It's hard to lead when another tornado rips through another major city in the state that you're leading. But you see, that's why it's important. When we're pulling that lever for whoever we're voting for, some of us will say, well, they believe this, and so I believe that, I'm going to vote for them. But look, regardless if you're Republican or Democrat, those folks are going to be leading us during times of crisis. They are. And so what we have currently as a nation, what's been concerning is that we're even politicizing this virus. And you can almost look and go, who wants to open the economy up? Who wants to not? Who wants to keep it shut down until a vaccine? And it's almost down party lines. But here's one thing you're not hearing a lot about. The governor of Georgia opened up their state before a lot of folks, and he got a lot of flack for it. At the exact same time, the governor of Colorado was doing the same thing. You didn't hear about that, though, did you? Now, why is that? What's the letter beside the governor of Georgia? It's an R. What's the letter beside the governor of Colorado? It's a D. Why do you think we're hearing all the press conferences from New York? Now, one of those reasons may be because it's the epicenter. But I would venture to argue it's because a lot of our media houses are housed there in New York. And because the governor has a D beside his name. Look, this isn't me with throwing out conspiracies. This is just the truth if you're watching it. And what I'm saying is, regardless if it's a D or an R, or if they're an independent, they need to lead well. They need your prayers during this time. We need to be praying for New York City and New York State. We need to be praying for the governor of Virginia. We need to be praying for our governor and our state leaders and our county mayors. Look, we're not just going to all of a sudden open everything back up. But having the conversation about opening the economy back up is not saying we don't care about people. The reverse is actually true. Because what you'll hear is just like what Jason was saying is, look, we need to open the economy up. We still need to protect our vulnerable. We need to do better for our assisted living folks and nursing home folks. We need to do better for the elderly in our communities. We must. We're not saying flippantly just go back to your business and forget about those folks. Of course not. We're just saying conversations need to happen about moving the ball down the field. And I'm thankful that here in the state of Tennessee, we're moving the ball down the field. And I hope you enjoyed today's conversation, and we'll talk with you again next week.